Get Published, Episode 11, for Sunday, August 23rd, 2009. Hi there, and welcome to Get Published. I'm your host, Mike Plested. Well, summer has finally arrived. Too bad it's August. Still, better late than never, I suppose. On today's episode, we talk to David Sackmeister, a published novelist, short story writer, and screenplay writer. We'll also hear a comment from Noel Scry about last episode, and I'll talk a little bit about a science fiction convention I attended this weekend. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Hutch! What's up, Hutch? Man, how you been, player?
Oh, okay, since I got on these new meds.
New meds, that's awesome, man. Man, I haven't seen you since the Parsecs last year, when you totally lost it and went on that profanity-laced verbal vomit rant. Man, that was hysterical.
I had to go see a therapist for it. She said I have deep emotional scars, dude.
You do?
Yep.
You're serious?
Yeah, man, it's a serious condition. And I have to be careful of the word parsecs. It can really set me off.
Uh-huh.
That's what the meds are for. Ever since last year's parsecs, I keep swearing uncontrollably.
Ah. Wow. Well then, is it bad for me to say that the fourth annual Parsec Awards will be held at Dragon Con 2009 in Atlanta, September 4th through the 7th?
No, it's okay. I can handle the parsecs.
Yeah, clearly.
Can people still submit their fiction podcasts at www.parsecawards.com?
Hell yes, they can. People can go there to nominate their favorite podcast, novel, short story, fan cast, and new categories like Best Anime Podcast, Best New Speculative Fiction Podcaster Team, and Best Speculative Fiction Music Podcast.
Well, we have to get people to go nominate. Those judges give every award to Matt Wallace, the giant-sized bastard. I mean, you and I have been in this game for longer than anyone, and we can't keep getting shut out. I mean...
Hutch!
What?
I won one last year.
Won a what?
A parsec.
You won a parsec?
Yeah, afraid so.
Well, motherfucking shit-eating son of a...
Uh-oh.
Suckers, they should just take that parsec and stick it right into their hole. I mean, fucking in and out, like a little dipstick.
Whoa.
These guys, every single time, I'm the only one left who hasn't won a fucking parsec.
I tell
you what I'm going to do, Scott Sigler. I'm going to go to Dragon Con, and I'm going to put my foot so far up their fucking asses, they're going to be flossing with my fucking shoestrings.
Dude, there's a vein pulsing in your neck, in your head.
Llama fuckers. Yes, they are llama fuckers, and they are sucking and eating burgers.
Oh, man, this is awesome. Jesus.
Please hang up and try again.
And now we're on to the feedback section of the show, and unfortunately we didn't get much for this episode. Nomad Scry linked the episode to his Brainworm site and wrote, "Beyond the oh my god of Mike's string of disasters, his repair job on the interview is inspired. At first, I thought that re-recording the Hutchins bits was a bit silly, but Plested really did an excellent job of pulling it off. Thanks, Nomad. I had people suggest that I simply post the second part of the interview as text, but not everybody reads the blog, and I didn't want to rob you, the listeners, of any of JC's insights. I also didn't want to diminish JC in any way by doing a poor job of it, so I'm glad you thought the effort was worthwhile. I still haven't received any feedback on my new voicemail line, which is 206-339-1258. I may have to call myself just to keep the line alive. Or you can also email me if you want to send me a recorded comment, or simply write me, and the email address is feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. You can also Twitter me at mplested, or contact me either via friend feed or Facebook. And my address for both is Michael Plested, and Michael's spelled M-I-C-H-E-L-L. I really encourage you to send me any questions, comments, confusions, or feedback that you might have for me. I'd really love to hear from you. Now, I had talked about mentioning some things that I had done, I guess, this weekend. So I had attended one of the local science fiction conventions called Conversion. Just some initial thoughts on it. For those of you who have aspirations to become published writers, I really encourage you to take some time and attend any local conventions you might have. Our convention has for special guests this weekend, Terry Brooks, Robert J. Sawyer, and Tanya Huff. A pretty impressive group of people, and they all have some very interesting things to say. There's also a publishing house, actually two publishing houses are in our dealer's room right now, and there are a ton of other authors wandering around just itching to share their insights on the whole publishing industry. So it's a really good opportunity to get out there and do some networking and maybe learn some tricks of the trade.
Beyond the Goblin Market lie the remains of a lost and broken kingdom divided by war. It has been over for centuries, but the kingdoms still stand apart, overrun by a creeping goblin darkness known as the Darken Involved. It has been written that only one holds the power to turn that darkness away. Only one can reunite the kingdoms, but she has no memory of her former life. Are you prepared to go beyond the Goblin Market and into the Darken Involved? Follow Meredith on her quest to find herself and save her sister from the cruel curse of a slighted king who would do anything to make Meredith his bride. Enter if you dare through the gates of the Goblin Market at www.jenniferhudock.com/goblin-market.
Danger. Incoming interview. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dave Sackmeister. After winning a creative writing award in high school, Dave went on to play several short stories and then his first novel, Twilight of the Fifth Sun, which was published by Dragon Moon Press. In 2005, he won second place in L. Ron Hubbard's Writers of the Future contest for his story, The Red Envelope. Silver and Gold, an epic historical novel which is set in the Gold Rush era, was recently published by Dragon Moon Press. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How are things going for you tonight?
Oh, very good, very good. As I told you before, I just actually finished a tennis match, so I'm a little winded, but I will catch my breath in a minute.
Well, I won't ask you to sing any songs or anything like that.
Thank you.
And that's for everybody's benefit, I'm sure.
Yes, it is. Been known to karaoke a few times, but it's not to anyone's pleasure.
Yeah, well, I can carry a tune, but I usually do it with my iPod. You know, I carry my iPod around. Yeah. That's about as funny as I get, Dave. Sorry. So can you tell us a little bit about your publishing history, Dave? I know I have alluded to it a little bit, but could you fill us in the blanks?
Yeah, you touched on some of the major pieces. You know, the thing that really got me going, I think, was in high school when I won this creative writing award, and that kind of inspired me to keep at it. And it was kind of funny because I went to a strict religious all-boys school, and I wrote this kind of controversial short story about time travel and a character who went back to the time of Jesus and Judas Iscariot, especially. And this was before all the Dead Sea stuff about Judas, and I kind of twisted it to make it look like Judas was the good guy and doing, you know, the Lord's work. And that actually somehow, instead of getting me kicked out of school, got me an award. So that was the first thing. It was just kind of neat to see my name in the paper and all that. And I just kind of been writing, you know, all through high school and since then, and just taking the leap to start submitting my stories. And it was all pretty much short stories for the first couple of years until you know, I've just been reading books all my life and decided I can try to write one of these. And in the meantime, I was sending short stories out and getting a few acceptances, getting a ton of rejections, some of them not very nice at first. And this was before the whole internet thing, so I, you know, wasted a lot of postage and stamps on these things just to get, you know, angry letters back or form letters. I had hundreds of them.
Wow, I was going to ask. I was going to ask if you know, your controversial first short story was the beginning of bigger things, and if you're getting angry rejections, maybe it was.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that. It was more for like bad cover letters, or, you know, sometimes I'd make rookie mistakes of putting the wrong editor's name on a submission, or sending it to the wrong address, something like that. And then, of course, the, you know, single spacing instead of double spacing and all that good stuff. So I had to learn the hard way.
I think most of us do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And definitely, I, you know, once people started accepting email submissions, it got a lot easier. Once I figured out the rules of, you know, courier font and double space and margins and all that good stuff. But yeah, I had a few acceptances and some major crushing defeats, in that I had a couple good acceptances from like pro magazines that would either, you know, I had one that turned around after 2 months and said, "I'm sorry, we accept your story, but that was a different editor and he's no longer with us and we've now rejected your story." And I had a couple other ones that folded before they ever published my story. So it's been a difficult road.
But one you've obviously kept up on.
Yeah, I just kept at it. I always had stories I wanted to tell, so I kept writing them and hoping that people would read them. And obviously, you touched on the one, the L. Ron Hubbard contest that I entered, and that was a surprise. That was the first year I entered that, and actually, you know, getting that call and saying I won second place was phenomenal. And they actually do a great job of, you know, bringing the authors in. You spend a week out there and somewhere in California and get to take classes from a lot of big name science fiction authors, and they, you know, make you wear tux for the ceremony, get a big award. So that was really, really cool. That gave me a lot of confidence. And then they kind of give you a bunch of information on how to take your career to the next level in terms of doing signings and contacting the media and things like that. So that helped a lot too.
Interesting. And I'm really glad to hear you talking about, you know, the signings and getting in touch with the media. Those are definitely things that are a bit of a mystery to me. What kind of things did they tell you you need to do?
Well, it's kind of like creating a brand for yourself.
Uh-huh.
And if people are familiar with marketing, it's, you know, coming out with, it's things like the web page. Obviously, you need a website. And then it's, you know, just getting enough exposure out there. So they actually helped a lot with setting up book signings. They called all the bookstores within my area, and even some of them that, you know, were outside of my area and kind of a pain to get to. But just make sure you go to these things. And even if you only sold one or two books, just the fact that, you know, you had your poster out there, you put something in the paper. So they did that with the book signings. And then they got me on a few radio programs. So there were a couple of local radio, you know, local PBS kind of things where they'll get you on and talk about your short story. And fortunately, I was in a position where I had and this is something else we can talk about, but I self-published a nonfiction book of local interest. There's a castle built in the 1800s up near my house, about an hour away, actually, on the Seneca Lake, and it's supposedly haunted. So I'd stayed there a couple times. It's also like a bed and breakfast kind of thing.
Right.
And I got intrigued enough by it that I went and did some research, and no one had ever written about this thing. So I decided to write the history of the place and, you know, interview the people and all that stuff. So it's nonfiction, but it's got a supernatural bend to it because I tried to figure out who the ghost was.
Right.
And that was something I could push to alongside of my other, you know, short stories and the book from Dragon Moon. So I had a couple other things of interest to people. So that's kind of how, you know, when you're building your brand to go after, yeah, I mean, not just a one note person. I've got some other things that we can talk about and might be of interest to other people.
Okay. No, that's very interesting. And I like what you're saying in that you didn't just leave it to a single story or a single book and hope that your audience would come to you. You actually started leveraging a bunch of different things together to try to get your name out there. And you were saying like the radio the radio interviews and so on, that was actually done by the writing contest. They helped you get there?
Yeah, they would actually go and contact, and they have a legion of people that were, you know, scouring out your hometown and finding any news media type of thing that they can, you know, they submitted a request to. There's a local person who's won this award. Can you put them on? I didn't get any nibbles from the TV stations, although I know other authors that have won did get those gigs, but apparently my town wasn't interested. But I did get a few of the radio ones, so that was good. Yeah.
And is that something that you've been able to keep up on yourself, or was that kind of a one-shot deal?
I was able to do another one for this other, it was called the Bellhurst Story on the Bellhurst Castle, just because there was another, you know, I contacted the radio station nearest to the castle itself, and they were happy to put me on and talk about it. The other thing I forgot to mention is the other local newspapers. There's usually one major newspaper in your city, and then there's a bunch of, each suburb has their own, you know, small paper, and it was worth it for me. I kind of did that on my own to contact their person in charge of, you know, local news, and they were happy to do a book review and, you know, just a little spotlight on a local author. So that got my name out as well.
Right. And I've actually heard some authors out there talking about putting a press kit together as a suggestion. So you're actually creating the story for the media, and you're feeding it to them, and, you know, they really don't have to do a whole lot to get your name out there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably something I need to focus on a little more with this. I'm releasing my new book. I'm trying to narrow that down and try to not only piece together, you know, what you have coming out that's new, but also bring in some of your history and the other books and things of interest to people.
Right. So make it relevant basically to the areas that you're trying to push your story in.
Right. Yeah.
So you've talked about the L. Ron Hubbard Writers of the Future contest. Would you consider that to be a defining moment in your career, or the defining moment, or have there been others?
That's definitely one of them. I would say, you know, as important that was, it was more of a confidence booster than it was for launching anything concrete in my career. You know, it just kind of gave me the confidence, okay, I won this. People think I have some kind of talent, so I might as well keep at it. And then it was still a lot of work after that, because, you know, they pretty much said, it's great to be in short stories, but you're not going to make a career of this. You might make a couple $100 a year. And if you're lucky, you know, win a $1,000 contest, but you're still not going to live off of that. So you got to get into novels. And so that's what, it was kind of a much different, you know, step and different direction. Although I can still use some of the, you know, all the stuff they taught me about marketing and promotion, but it was really getting to the next level of writing a something larger that people want to read and getting that published. So I think the next thing, I'm hopefully close on this point, is there's definitely Silver and Gold, which just came out, and I'm excited to have another book out there. And I think I'm close with, I've got two other novels that I'm pushing. One, both of them have been represented now by an agent. And we can talk about that in a minute, but I just got a contract for one of them from another medium range publisher called Variance Publications.
Okay.
And I'm excited about this because it's part one of a trilogy I helped to write. I've actually finished two of the books, and it's about a series of, it's going to be a series about a team of psychic archaeologists. They specialize in remote viewing and can see, you know, into the past, so it kind of gives them an edge on finding, you know, ancient treasures and things of that like.
Okay.
So the first one deals with the Pharaoh's lighthouse in Alexandria, Egypt, and there's a legend that there's a great treasure hidden beneath there by Alexander the Great, so they're off to try to find that. And it's kind of like a Da Vinci Code, you know, thriller where they're looking for ancient relics and things like that. So I did get an offer, and it's, you know, first time I guess I count that as my next milestone, because it's, you know, a nice advance and some decent royalties. And we're at the stage now where the agent's looking through the contract because it's got some issues, but hopefully we'll correct that and move forward quickly.
Well, congratulations. And that really brings a question up. I know some people have the impression that once they get their first book signed and published, suddenly, you know, doors are going to open everywhere. Is that really the case, or is it still a fairly hard slog to find other publishers willing to represent you?
Yeah, I guess that's probably different for every author. I think in my case, because you know, Twilight and now Silver and Gold are, they weren't from one of the, you know, great big New York houses. Dragon Moon's definitely a great house, and they've done a lot for me. But in terms of, you know, exactly promoting me to the bestseller list, I think even if you have someone who has a novel through one of the big houses, it doesn't really guarantee anything unless you've really, you know, hit the charts. At least that's been my impression. So you still got to work at the next one. I think I've even heard stories that, and this kind of scares me, that, you know, if your first book doesn't do that well, no matter who published it, you could be in trouble for your next one. You really got to make a good first impression, or else, you know, you're going to have some trouble finding someone to pick up the next book.
No, I completely understand what you're saying. I've heard the same thing. And you've talked about promoting your work a few times now. Can you tell me, you know, what your thoughts are, I guess, first of all, as to who really owns the promotion of a book, in your opinion? Is it the agent? Is it the publisher? Is it the author? Is it somebody else?
Yeah, I think unfortunately, in today's environment, I think it all really boils down to the author. And you're not assuming that, the publisher, you can hope that they will help promote you, but a lot of it's going to be on yourself, and you got to kind of know that is going to be the case. I think 10, 20 years ago, it was a lot different. You can just write and let the publisher, you know, do all the heavy work in terms of promotion. But now it's switched. At least it's 50-50, but it's probably more on the author's side. And I don't know, I get the sense there's certain books the publishers really take a chance on and put their money behind and will promote you. But the other ones, you're kind of on your own, unfortunately. That's just the environment.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I've been given as well. So with promotion being more on your shoulders, what kind of things are you doing? Now, you've mentioned you've done some media interviews, you've done signings. What other kinds of stuff do you do?
Yeah, so I'm getting into some other ideas of, you know, just trying to ideas through books on promotions and other blogs of authors talking about what to do for promotion. You know, I've heard ideas like going on news groups, finding, you know, I think this is a big one that helps. I just went to a convention in New York, a thriller convention, and there was a big seminar on how to promote your book. And one of the things they were talking about a lot is finding out, you know, your subject, your book, and then going to the web to find news groups, Yahoo groups, all the kinds of groups out there that you can join that have a similar subject. Like Silver and Gold is based on, you know, it's historical fiction. It deals with gold rush, gold mining, dog sledding. So I would go and try to find news groups out there of fans of all these things, or and join those and try to get out there and introduce myself, say I got a book on this that would be of interest to your members, you know, join in the discussion groups, make sure your signature has your book and picture on it.
Right.
There's those kinds of things. There's, you know, putting signed copies of your book on eBay, maybe at a low price to try to generate interest. There's another one called librarything.com, which is, you know, just a collection of fans of books, and they'll put their whole libraries on there so everyone can see what they're interested in. But it's a good place for authors too to go on. And I just put my book up there for they have a contest where you can raffle off for free, but the way to generate interest, you put copies of your book out there and people will, you know, submit their name to hope to win those. So right now, last time I checked, I had over 100 people interested in the 5 copies I put out there. And if nothing else, at least it got the people reading about it. And if they don't win it, maybe they'll buy it.
Yeah, exactly. So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's that kind of thing. There's a few other sites like that that you can just promote yourself.
Well, and I know with Silver and Gold, I believe that you and Dragon Moon have got your first chapter available for free. And I read that first chapter, and boy, that really grabbed my attention. So, I have to get out there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I put that on my website. I think Dragon Moon's got a link to it as well. So that's a good idea to, yeah, everyone should just try to put, you know, a little teaser out there to get people interested.
Right. So I think to kind of wrap up what you've just said is really figure out what the core audience is and find out where that audience exists and go after them through whatever method. Right.
Yeah, anything you can do. I mean, it's not necessarily something on the web. Maybe they've got, like, I know there's a Gold Rush convention every year in California. I wrote to them and said, you know, I'd love to come down there and, you know, set up a booth or something, and, or give a talk or sell my books, whatever. It'd be of interest to your members and that kind of thing. You just got to keep an eye out for.
Right. That's a great idea. I know one author that I follow. In his book, there's a bit of a martial arts theme. Some of the characters do martial arts. So he's actually appeared as kind of a guest in residence for martial arts groups. You know, they have a monthly gathering where they talk about martial arts, and he's actually gone in. And really, the martial arts portion of his story is kind of fringe to the actual plot, but, you know, he's found a way to get in there.
Yeah, good.
So you might have to do some traveling up into the Yukon and so on.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Maybe I can go back on the cruise ship, so I take that path down the Alaska and push it there.
You might.
I would like if they would pay my way.
Well, that would be good. I mean, well, you have, you know, the whole ship. You have them basically as a captive audience while you're out at sea.
Yeah.
And you could tell them that you'll leave them alone if they'll buy, you know, several copies of your book.
I'm going to write that down.
Otherwise, I'm afraid a cruise might be a fairly expensive marketing campaign.
Yeah, I could write it off, but I don't know. That might be stretching it. But definitely conventions are a good way to go, too, because, you know, just being able to – they always have a spot for authors to sit and if you don't get on panels, which you definitely should try to get on as well. Unfortunately, I just missed a couple conventions that happened this summer before Silver and Gold was out, or I would have been able to, you know, jump on some panels and push it. But hopefully next year.
Well, good. So kind of I guess just a standard question is, what do you love the most about being a writer?
Yeah. Good question. It's just to have that ability to create whole new worlds, characters, kind of play God for a while. And it's a way to let out all the imagination in my head. And I just love the whole prospect of creating stories and plots. And just the very fact of writing for me is just so much fun, just getting lost in the story. And I really like lose track of time, and it just almost like the story comes out of me and or kind of writes itself for a while. And it's great to read that afterwards.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do your characters actually ever take over the writing process from you?
Yeah, a lot for me. It's, you know, I try to work from an outline, and it's always, I'll just throw the outline out after a couple of days. Cause I start writing and totally goes another direction with the characters just start saying stuff and doing things that push me somewhere else.
I've had characters do the same thing. I've been able to kind of, you know, steer them towards where I want the ending to be, but they've done all of the smart and stupid things in the middle on their own.
Yeah. I was going to say the only part I don't like being a writer is, but it's a necessary part is the rewriting and editing part. And now some people like that, but I think of it as a big, sure, but I understand the value because that's where really the polishing and all the improvements happen. It's just, that's the thing, I got to just set myself away and have some time to really go through it and really polish it up. But I love the creative part, but then that's like the other side of the brain where I got to sit and, you know, correct all the semantics and make sure the words are right and flowing properly.
Yeah, I completely understand. I know I'm my the book I just finished editing I don't know how many times I've been through it, but I'm not sure I really ever want to see it again, even after it's in print.
Right, right. That's why I was so grateful. Dragon Moon had a great editor this time, Gabrielle Harbury, that helped me out. I mean, I had been through this book a million times. I thought I had it perfect, and he took a few passes at it and found all these things that I had missed. I was like so glad she had looked at it before it went to publication.
And you mentioned earlier on that you have an agent working for you, and I understand that that is a fairly recent occurrence. Can you tell us a little bit about the process you went through to get yourself an agent?
Yeah, so that's been a long, long process. I think it started 10 years ago when I was with much different books, earlier ones, even before Twilight of the Fifth Sun. Every book I finished, I would start out just shipping it off to, 30 of the top agents. I kind of had an Excel spreadsheet going of all these agents, and I sorted it by what subjects they represent, and had a list of what books and authors, and it was pretty detailed, and I spent so much time on that thing I should have been writing. So I had this whole document, and I would just fire off five or six at a time, and it wasn't the whole book. Most of the time they wanted to see their cover letter, the first 30 pages or so. And I had a couple of nibbles here and there, but sometimes they asked for the full manuscript, and 6 months later they said no thanks. And so it was just that process. And finally I had a new book that I did this process with, and about the 10th agent I sent it to, this was Foundry Literary and Media, came back and said they loved the first three chapters and sent me the rest. And that was in end of 2007. So then I waited 6 months, 8 months, and finally sent him a query. I'm like, are you still interested in this? Because I hadn't been sending it to anyone else. I thought they were, kind of asking for an exclusive. And finally said, yeah, we're still interested. Give us a few more months. I'll wait a few more months.
Yeah.
And then finally they get back and said, okay, we like it, but we want to make you do some changes to it because we got some problems with it. So I'm like, sure, anything. And then I waited another couple months to get those changes. And when I saw them, they asked for some pretty big changes. They didn't like the ending. They thought I had too many characters. I had to cut two of them. And, it wasn't too bad. I was kind of thinking about along those lines anyway. So I did those changes, sent it back, and then waited another 4 months. And finally, I got them to say, okay, we like what you did, and we're going to take one more pass at it and then get it ready to send out. And I'm like, so are you representing me? I'm like, and it was kind of weird. They didn't send me any documentation or anything. But they said, yeah, it's an informal agreement, but we're your agent now. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, and then while you're on this, the time they were looking at this book, this was the one called Blind Spots. It's another thriller. I can talk about that a little later if you like. But the other book about the psychic archaeologist, which kind of tentatively right now being called the Mobius Group.
Uh-huh.
I had sent that off on my own to a publisher that one of my friends who won an award with me back in the Writers of the Future ceremony was, well, he had just been accepted by them. He's like, oh, they're looking for new books. So I sent them in one of mine, and they had gotten back to me and said, we're interested. Like to make you an offer on this. Well, but we can't do it yet. We're going to wait a couple more months because apparently they didn't have the money.
Okay.
to make an advance. So while I was waiting, the agent from Foundry was still on the fence. So I kind of sent them a note saying, I've got this other deal pending from Variance Publishing Company. And if you'd like, I'd like you to be my agent on that one. So I kind of pushed them along a little bit faster.
Nothing like, a deal that you've already closed to get their interest.
Right. And at first I was like, do I really want to give them 15% for something I've already done? But then the contract came in and it was like all gobbledygook to me. So I sent it to her, and I'm actually happy I did that because she redlined the heck out of it and had all these other clauses. And I'm kind of glad she's, working on my behalf. There's stuff about foreign rights and, film rights and all these other ancillary things that I didn't really know about. And so if she makes sure I'm being represented properly on that, I guess it's worth it.
Well, and that you're kind of reading my mind a little bit there. I was going to ask you, what an agent will actually bring to the table for you that you didn't really have before. So just that legal alone is worth it, it sounds like.
Yeah, at least in this case, I think otherwise I would have probably just gone with it. And, you know, I talked to my other friend who was represented by them, and he said, you know, they're probably asking for those foreign rights because he had done a deal on his own and got a lot of money from, you know, Spain and, you know, Australia, a couple of other places. That they didn't see any money out of, and now they're trying to make sure they get that. But it's not common, I guess, in the publishing industry for them to ask for foreign rights. So
okay,
that's something I didn't know. So in that regard, agents definitely can help to make sure your, you know, your work is definitely your own and you're getting all the money you deserve from it. But then the other piece is, I think, really escalated to one of the bigger houses that just won't look at anything unagented. You kind of really need that person acting for you to get it in the door, which I hope she can do with the next book.
Right. And so how many books have you got doing the rounds right now?
So it's really just this one with Variance, the Mobius Group, and then Blind Spots, which is just, we're finishing up a few more edits, and I think it's going to be ready to go out probably in September to, you know, make the rounds of the publishing houses. So just really that one, I'm got a lot of hope for that one. It's more of a, you know, mainstream thriller, contemporary kind of thing that might have more of a broad appeal than, you know, some of the other science fiction angle ones that I've got. So I don't know, we'll see. I hope, you know, although I hear, you know, even the agent was saying it's a very difficult environment right now. People in the publishing business are consolidating and doing lots of layoffs, so don't get your hopes up. So it's always difficult.
So they're giving you that dose of realism too,
right?
Yeah, hate having to live in the real world.
Yeah. It always seems like whenever I start setting things out, it's the worst time. Like when even the short stories, it's, you know, all the magazines started folding just as soon as I was sending them out to them.
Right. Well, and I know, I think it was Strange Horizons. They were doing a big, almost a PBS style campaign to try to earn some or get some additional funds and donations so that they could keep publishing.
Well, yeah, I heard like Realms of Fantasy closed and then was bought out by someone else, I think, as a lifeline. And I had a story in with them too that was close, I think. And yeah, it's just, you never know. There's not many left.
No, unfortunately, that's true. Well, I mean, the print versions are certainly fading away, but there seems to be more than ever online.
Yeah, I think that's, I've gotten a few short stories in more of the online areas, like Abyss and Apex is a good online magazine that I've got another one coming out in the fourth quarter. And then I think the same thing with novels, there might be some potential with you know, digital publishers, some, you know, ebooks and things like that, new avenues, at least to start out, get your name out there, get some press and people aware of your books. And then that's another route, because sometimes, you know, the bigger publishers will look to see if you have a track record and a fan base, whatever way you can get it.
Right. And is your fan base, is that something you actually track, or you kind of have a bit of a sense just from your book sales?
Yeah, I'm slowly working on that. I'm trying to get people to, you know, send me emails to be on a newsletter so I can keep them updated. Right now I've got like 200 or 300 people just kind of, you know, talking to them and getting feedback. But, you know, I've got the website that says, you know, add me to your newsletter, is a little button you can push. So other than that, I just, no real way to know.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult problem, isn't it?
Yeah, you just hope they're out there.
Yeah, no, very true. I mean, if you look at some of the podcasters out there, they tend to track based on unique hits on their sites or number of downloads, but it's a little more difficult if you're just going the traditional route.
Yeah, and podcasting is another way I'd like to investigate soon. That's another promotional tool. And getting on guest blogs is the other one. Find blogs that, you know, talk about your subject matter in your book and
right.
do a guest blog site. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to tell you, you've just been indoctrinated into the podcasting.
All right. Fantastic.
So before I ask you to tell us more about silver and gold, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you want to talk about?
The only other thing I can think of in terms of my writing background and career is that I'm kind of like excited about screenplays all of a sudden. And in the last year or two, just another way to branch into something else. It's a little different, but it's fun. It's almost more fun than writing novels sometimes. I kind of got into it after winning the Red Envelope, and I was talking to some people at that contest, and they said, oh, you know, because they're from Hollywood out there, but you should write a screenplay. Maybe try your hand at that. So I didn't know anything about it, but you know, when I got home, I got a few books on it, and then there's a whole bunch of websites out there that will let you download existing movies in a screenplay form just to study them. And I thought I could try this, and honestly, it was a lot of fun. I turned that Red Envelope into a screenplay, and then the tricky part here is finding an agent for a novel is difficult. Finding an agent for a screenplay is like a million times worse.
Right, and so, never the two shall meet, I'm sure.
Right. They don't even want to. I think if you told them you're a novelist, they don't even want to look at you. They think you'd be too wordy, and that's not what you want in a screenplay. You want to be brief and concise. So, you know, I kind of leave that out. But I wrote this screenplay, and I've written a few other ones. But what I've been doing is sending them to a contest, because there's a lot of good contests out there that will give you exposure, if not cash, if you win or come close.
Right.
So my Red Envelope came, you know, I was a finalist in a whole bunch of these things, you know, getting to the top 10 out of a thousand or two. And I wrote another one that made it. There was this big contest called the Nichols Fellowship, which is the major screenwriting competition out there that most producing companies follow. And that got into the top 100. And I didn't get an option out of it, but I got a lot of big production companies asked me to read it and see what else I had. So that was cool. Still working a few angles there, but no nibbles yet. I'm actually starting another one soon that I hope might have some luck. And the fun with that is just that it's, you know, the novel might take me 6 months to write, but screenplay is like 3 weeks, just because it's, you know, 110 pages maximum, and there's a lot of blank space. It's just dialogue and really short, you know, directions. So I can really crank those out, and it's actually a good way to actually, if you want to outline a novel, to think about writing it as a screenplay first, because it forces you to come up with what they call a log line, you know, like a one or two sentence thing about what your story's about.
Right.
And that's pretty much what you need when you want to send it to a publisher. You want to send a novel to a publisher or an agent. You want to hook them quickly, because you don't have much time. They get hundreds of these things a week. You got to catch them real quick. So the screenplays kind of forced me into that habit of how quickly can I intrigue someone with this story idea.
Well, I guess we should watch for you to be the next Michael Crichton then.
I wish.
Well, you know, everybody starts small, right?
Yep.
So tell us a little bit more about Silver and Gold.
Okay. Silver and Gold is based on, I guess, see how I can word this here, but if you read the introduction to the book, you see I have influence by the television show Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which has the character of Yukon Cornelius, who's a prospector that they run across up in the Arctic. And he's only in there for like 5 minutes, but I was just like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if someone write a, you know, an epic story about that guy? And at the time, I just read, you know, Gregory Maguire's Wicked and seen what he did with the Wicked Witch, and turned that into a huge, you know, satirical adult kind of novel. So I wanted to try something similar with this, and I got into it, and you know, I actually wanted to use the name and all that, but I contacted people who still own the copyright for the character, and they weren't, you know, kind of favorable to me doing that, unfortunately. Even though I promised to give them, you know, all my money that I make from this thing, they still didn't care. I guess they had some other ideas for the character and didn't really want to see this. So I was like, all right, how about I change the name and just go my own way with it? And they were like, fine. So I'm sure it still bears some similarities, but I put that disclaimer in there and changed everything that I could think of. But still, at its heart, it's a story about a legendary prospector who's just really good at what he does, and set in the historical times of, you know, California and Alaska in later half of the 19th century. And, you know, I've got some of the abominable snowman in there, Yeti, whatever you want to call them. But I did a lot of research at the time, and all the Indian legends up in that area of the Yukon and that upper Washington and everything had, you know, legends and myths about these creatures. So I put them in there as, you know, just kind of his eternal enemies that have been dogging him all his life while he's trying to do his thing and save his family and find gold and all this stuff. And there's just a lot of historical accuracy that I put into it. It's really a story of a father and a son. And they have a lot of flashbacks of father telling him how it was in the old days, which was, you know, the start of the gold rush, and how, you know, his father had teamed up with someone who turned evil and just wanted to pillage the land and dynamite everything and get as much money as he could. And his father was really more like, I just want enough to survive. So those two conflicting characters, and unfortunately his family had the genes that could find the gold easily and were just good at what they did and made them the envy of a lot of the evil characters. So and then I wove in all the interesting characters of the time, Jack London and Herbert Hoover was around then, and just the whole history around that time period was just really interesting. So I was able to work that in, just the whole gold rush and thousands of people that risked their lives in the most extreme conditions trying to get wealthy when only a few of them ever did. It was just a great setting for it.
You really drug me in on the first chapter. So now I've got to pick your book up and add it to the 3 feet of reading I've still got ahead of me.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully it'll captivate you and you won't be able to put it down when you pick it up again.
No, it was very interesting. And in fact, I would even call it fairly timely. I read something here, I think 2 days ago, where they're talking about finding the mother lode that was never actually really discovered during the Klondike Gold Rush.
Oh, great.
And they're talking about this. They're talking about the vein of gold being, you know, several miles long.
Wow. Yeah, because so many people went up there and, you know, dug and trudged and blew up everything they could find. And
yeah, exactly.
And I had seen something on one of the news shows last month or the month before about, you know, with the economy and everything that people are in California, especially, are just picking up gold pans and panning equipment and going into the rivers trying to find, you know, whatever they can, since it's gold is worth so much too, $900 an ounce. So.
Well, if there's nothing else,
making a comeback.
Yeah, if there's nothing else you can do, if you can't get a job anywhere else, that's maybe not a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
And where can my listeners find you? You've talked about your webpage, so go ahead, pimp yourself.
Okay. Yeah, it's on sackmeister.com. Probably a little difficult to spell, but it's SAKMYSTER. I'm also on Facebook, and I have a LinkedIn address, I believe, too. On Library Thing, a couple other places like that. I don't have a Twitter yet, just because I can't quite figure out how I can be that, you know, non-wordy, I guess I would say. What's the limit, like 10 words at a time or something?
Well, it's 140 characters on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I could do that. I would just tend to babble on. But I suppose I should get into that at some point.
Yeah, it's certainly it's an interesting environment for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show today, Dave. I really appreciate the time you've taken for us. And any last words of advice, encouragement, before we let you go?
No, I would definitely just say, for all the authors out there, just keep at it and branch out as much as possible into, you know, short stories, novels, screenplays, whatever, nonfiction, just whatever you can do to get your name out there and have, you know, something else to point to and more fans to follow you. I think every little bit helps.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. Thanks again, Dave, and take care, and we'll talk to you hopefully on your next book.
Thank you very much.
The grand design of nine.
Those words haunt the mind of Brinkvale psychiatric therapist, Zach Taylor, when his elderly patient, a remorseless killer, utters that phrase. Zach embarks on a quest to glean its cryptic meaning. The answers lie with the patient's psychic granddaughter. But Hen is crazier than the people Zach treats, and the mystical great blade of blood he soon pursues may be more dangerous and deadly than Zach ever imagined. J.C. Hutchins' Personal Effects, Sword of Blood, is a prequel audio novella to his supernatural thriller novel, Personal Effects, Dark Art. Learn more about both stories and become a part of the Personal Effects universe at jchutchins.net.
And that's our show. If you'd like to leave feedback, comments, or questions, you can call the voicemail line at 206-339-1258, or you can send me an email at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. Send me a friend request on Facebook or friend feed at Michael Plested, that's M-I-C-H-E-L-L, or follow me on Twitter at mplested. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, work hard, never give up, and maybe you too can get published. Thanks for listening.
Get Published is an Irreverent Muse production.